The Off the Ball Podcast Network.
The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Sexton promotes at the 10-meter line. It's spinning.
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
All right, you're very welcome along to another Rugby World Cup show here on Off the Ball. Just 2 days to go now until Ireland and New Zealand in the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals. The clock is ticking down, the team news is in, and the excitement is really starting to build for Saturday morning's last eight meeting. On today's World Cup show, we are going to be speaking to our man in Japan, Owen Sheehan, and we're also going to cross to New Zealand as well to speak to a New Zealand rugby player that a lot of Irish fans will remember fondly, a former Munster man, Heineken Cup winner in 2008. Rua Tupoki is going to join us on the line as well to look ahead to this weekend's game. A reminder, we are streaming across all of our social channels on Off the Ball, on Twitter, Facebook and on YouTube, and we're also online at the moment on OTB Sports Radio, which you can get on offtheball.com/radio, or you can listen to us on the Go Loud app as well and listen back to all of our rugby podcasts, which of course are all sponsored by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. Now, the big news this morning, Joe Schmidt showed his hand for this weekend's game. He's named his team. Just three changes to his side for the game against New Zealand. You can see it on your screen there in front of you. It's back to the tried and trusted, I think it's fair to say. Peter O'Mahony, Rob Kearney and Gary Ringrose all included in the starting 15, having sat out on the starting team, at least, the game against Samoa. Tadhg Byrne and Jordan Larmour are on the bench, dropping out of that side. And, of course, Bundiaki is suspended. Ireland choosing not to appeal his three-game ban, which, regardless of what happens this weekend, will rule him out for the remainder of the World Cup. So, also three changes from the start lineup that played against New Zealand a year ago in Dublin, which Ireland won. Ian Henderson would be replacing Devon Toner from that day. Conor Murray, remember, of course, missed that match. Kieran Marmion played instead of him, but Conor Murray is in there now. And Robbie Henshaw also missed that, so he comes in and plays for the second game in a row, having missed the first few games for Ireland. So in full, Rob Kearney returns at fullback. On the wings, you have Keith Earls and Jacob Stockdale. Stockdale, of course, the try scorer in that great win for Ireland. Can he do the same again this year? Who knows? Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw in the centre then, with Jonathan Sexton and Conor Murray partnering up in the halfbacks. And I think I read this morning that makes them the most capped Irish halfbacks in Test rugby history. Then in the front row, it's, as you expect, Cian Healy, Rory Best and Tadhg Furlong. Ian Henderson and James Ryan in the second row, while Peter O'Mahony comes back in at blindside flanker. Josh van der Fleer is at 7 and CJ Stander is at number 8. While on the bench, Niall Scannell is the substitute hooker. Sean Cronin obviously has been officially ruled out of the World Cup. He picked up a recurrence of a neck injury in the last few days, and Rob Herring has come out to join the squad. Hopefully for Rob Herring, he might get a run at some stage in this tournament if Ireland are to progress a little bit further on, who knows. But Dave Kilcoy and Andrew Porter are the other front row substitutes. Tadhg Byrne is on the bench, as is Reese Ruddock, who missed last weekend's game. Well, Luke McGrath, Joey Carberry and Jordan Larmour complete the substitutes bench. Peter O'Mahony, one of those coming in from last weekend's game. We can hear now about from Joe Schmidt talking about picking Peter O'Mahony and what he brings to the team.
He brings a leadership and experience. He's a very effective line out operator for us. It's part of it is the structure, the way that he ends up in our across the width of the pitch. He tends to be playing in the wider channels, and therefore he's not as involved as some of the other players who are closer in. So, you know, I think stats always tell part of a story, but they don't tell the complete picture. And for us, there are things that he can add for us that we think could be really important. Obviously, in the lineout, you know, he saved our bacon last time we played with an exceptional turn and chase and the long arms that he reached out just to pluck the ball in front of Ben Smith to avoid Ben Smith. Really, I think he would have scored for certain if Pete hadn't got back and saved that. I think he won two balls on the ground in that game as well that were really important. So he has been a bit of a big moments player for us. Maybe not as many moments, but the big moments, they count.
Yeah, the big moments, they count, and who can remember, who can forget that incredible interception when it looked like Ben Smith was going in the corner last year at the Aviva Stadium. Peter O'Mahony, arguably his best ever Irish performance, came against the All Blacks in November of last year. Could he do the same again? Get your texts into us, leave a comment on our YouTube stream, or you can catch us on Twitter at Off the Ball as well. New Zealand, meanwhile, have also named their team, and they are at pretty much close to full strength, you could say. Three changes from their last game of real note, which was against South Africa on the opening weekend. Brodie Retallick obviously is fit again. He takes the place of Scott Barrett, who's on the bench. Cody Taylor starts at hooker with Dane Coles on the bench, and Jack Goodhue comes into the centre. Interestingly, just 8 of the starting 15 from last year's test against Ireland start this weekend, and there aren't even many injuries to take note of from between those two games. It just shows the sheer volume of turnover in the New Zealand squad and how they just constantly evolve. George Bridge and Sevi Reese are on the wings. Anton Leonard-Brown comes into the centre from that Ireland game. And Richie Mwanga, of course, is at 10 with Beauden Barrett, now back at full-back. And in the forwards, Nepo Laulala, who was on the bench that day in the Aviva starts, along with Joe Moody, Steve Hansen looking for more mobility. And that's what he wasn't getting out of Owen Franks and Carl Tuinakuafe last year. While Sam Kane also didn't feature for Ireland, he's alongside Ardie Savia and Kieran Reid in the back row. Steve Hansen going for that, dual open side back row format. So in full, Joe Moody, Cody Taylor and Nepo Laulala in the front row. Brodie Retallick and Sam Whitelock. Sam Whitelock making his 116th cap this weekend. Ardie Savia, Sam Kane and Kieran Reid make up the back row. While Aaron Smith and Richie Mwanga partner in the 10s, Steve Hansen seems set on this Mwanga 10 and Beauden Barrett at full back, which seems to be working quite well so far. On the wings, George Bridge and Sevi Reese, just 12 caps between them in Test rugby. What a revelation they've been, the Crusaders pair. Well, Anton Leonard-Brown and Jack Goodhue are in the centre and Beauden Barrett at full back. Well, Dane Coles, Ofa Tuingofasi, Angus Taiavo, Scott Barrett, Matt Todd, TJ Perenara, Sonny Bill Williams and Jordy Barrett complete the team. Incredibly, Rico Ioane, not even in the match day 23, which just shows the incredible depths of talent that New Zealand have. Also, some pretty wild team news coming in ahead of England and Australia, also on Saturday morning. Teenager Jordan Pitaia will play as a centre for Australia for the very first time in Saturday's quarterfinal. The 19-year-old is only going to win his third cap after he previously played on the wing in this tournament. He will partner Samu Karevi in midfield. He's played just 13 Super Rugby games. He's 19 years old. Injury has plagued his pretty much his entire 2019 season. But Michael Cheka is throwing him fully into the deep end here. In full, that team, Kirtley Beale, Reese Hodge, Jordan Pitaia, Samu Karevi, Marika Kariabedi on the other wing, Christian Leilafano and Will Genair are the halfbacks. Alan Alatoa, Tolu Latu and Scott Seo in the front row. Rory Arnold, Isaac Rodda, Issi Nasirani, Michael Hooper and David Pocock in the back row, while the replacements, Jordan Ulysses, James Slipper, Taniela Tupou, Adam Coleman, Lucan Salakaloto, Nick White, Matt Tumua and James O'Connor. And the other big bombshell that England have dropped, George Ford is on the bench for their quarterfinal. Owen Farrell is selected at fly half. Up until now, they've been persisting with Farrell in the centre and George Ford at out half, and George Ford seemed to be playing quite well. But Eddie Jones has left Ford out for probably the biggest game of Jones' entire four-year career with England. Henry Slade comes into Farrell to partner Manu Tuilagi in midfield. That was a partnership that did very, very well in the Six Nations, though, particularly against Ireland. So there is a logic to what Eddie Jones is doing, and both Billy and Mako Vunipola have been declared fit to start. Interestingly, though, George Cruse drops to the bench. Courtney Laws takes his place. So they go with a back line of Youngs, Farrell, Anthony Watson and Johnny May on the wings, Elliot Daly at fullback, and Slade and Tuilagi in the centre, with Mako Vunipola, Jamie George, Carl Sinclair in the front row, Maro Itoje and Courtney Laws in the second row, and Sam Curry, Curry Underhill and Billy Vunipola in the back row. Owen Sheehan is joining us on the line now. We can welcome him aboard. Owen, how are you today?
Very well, Neil. How are you getting on?
We're not too bad now. No surprises in the team news for Ireland, at least. I know you probably heard me there going through the England and Australia teams, where there were a couple of bombshells dropped, thrown in by Eddie Jones and Michael Cheka. But I think it's very much what we expected out of Joe Schmidt for this weekend. Rob Kearney back in, Peter O'Mahony back in, and Gary Ringrose in to take the place of the suspended Bundiaki.
Yeah, it's exactly what we expected. I think even though Jordan Larmour is probably in the form
of somebody who deserves to start a World Cup quarterfinal, there was never any question that Joe Schmidt would turn his back on Rob Kearney at this moment. There have been so many question marks down through the years about Rob Kearney, and he tends to come up with a big answer whenever those questions are asked. Joe Schmidt has trust in him. There's reason why he trusts him so much, and there's reason why he starts at full-back this weekend. Jordan Larmour will have to wait to get his opportunity. He is kind of in the mould of a player right now who looks set to kind of light up the World Cup, but he's not going to get that opportunity. It's simple as that. No matter how far we go through this tournament at this point, Jordan Larmour will always be second fiddle to Rob Kearney, you'd suspect. That's just the reality of the situation. Peter O'Mahony, perhaps. There's probably a bigger question mark around O'Mahony than there was around Rob Kearney, because I guess O'Mahony's form has been worse than Kearney. And Schmidt in the press conference today was kind of sticking up for O'Mahony in that regard and saying that he should be starting. Obviously, he thinks he should be starting because he's in there. And then the final one was kind of a decision taken out of Schmidt's hands that Gary Ringrose starts at 13. But you put Gary Ringrose right up there with Jordan Larmour, don't you, in terms of probably the two most informed players at this World Cup for Ireland?
Yeah, and I think it was interesting on Peter O'Mahony, as you mentioned there. There were a couple of people putting his position under pressure. There have been a few pundits, obviously, that make the point that there are certain players that just raise their game and they just suit a particular opposition. And I think Peter O'Mahony, as we played a clip there from Joe Schmidt talking about just how influential he was 11 months ago when Ireland beat the All Blacks, the line-out steals, turnovers, that absolute last-ditch dive to collect that ball when it looked like Ben Smith was going to take it and go over in the corner. Those things obviously play on a coach's mind.
Well, of course they do. But at the same time, I'm not sure is 11 months ago good enough in terms of actually giving the thumbs up for a player. I think if Joe Schmidt is thinking to himself, well, he played well against the All Blacks last November, I should therefore start him. I think that's bad thinking. Like, you mean, you've gone through the changes there in the All Blacks setup. Look at all the changes they've gone through in the space of 12 months. So, granted, they did lose that game. Ireland were in a much better place than the All Blacks were. And probably a few fans down in New Zealand wanted heads to roll in terms of personnel on the pitch after that defeat in Dublin last year. But nevertheless, if Peter O'Mahony hadn't showed anything in 2019, I don't think he'd be in the starting lineup. He's probably in a situation now where he needs a game of his life. Thing is, I mean, if there is a cohort, if there's a handful of players who underperform on Saturday, Ireland will get beaten. It's as simple as that. If you go up against the All Blacks and you don't have close to 15 men playing close to the very, very top of their potential, you are going to lose that game of rugby. So Peter O'Mahony, he needs that. You'd like to think that he might somehow have the reserve of confidence from last year to be able to put in a performance like that. But this year's tournament hasn't exactly gone his way.
Yeah, I think, and even given what we know about Joe Schmidt, and, you know, he does have his tried and trusted players, like someone like Rob Kearney as well. When you consider that this is potentially his last ever game managing Ireland, it would have been fairly fanciful to think that he would just be going with the gut and throwing in players that he thinks might just suit an occasion.
Well, that's it exactly. And you can bet your bottom dollar that Joe Schmidt has thought about this exact matchup. He might have thought that it might be coming later in the World Cup, or hoping that it would be coming a little bit later in the World Cup, but his plan for the All Blacks wasn't something that he just put out last November. I'm sure that it's come along a bit of a way over the last 11 months. He's got a renewed plan to take on the All Blacks. He wanted to get this matchup at some point in this tournament, so he's going to put it into practice, and that includes the personnel. This is the team that he feels best to take on the All Blacks at the outset of the tournament, let's not forget. So we've got everybody fit, the only absence really being Bundy Aki this weekend. Would he have started Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose ahead of Bundy Aki anyway for an All Blacks game? Potentially he might have done, Neil. So there is a chance that if Joe Schmidt had picked a starting 15 for the All Blacks game in a potential World Cup final before this tournament started, it might be the exact 15 that are starting this weekend. So there can be no excuses on that front. There was plenty of them in 2015, and I guess they were right to make so many excuses in 2015, considering half the team and half the best players have got wiped out. But this time, those excuses just do not exist. But they keep mentioning this whole thing that no matter how well you play against the All Blacks, you can play the game of your life and still potentially lose.
Absolutely, I think that's very much the case. Has there been much talk this week, and I suppose today really in particular, because it's the first time Joe would have been in front of the media, has there been much talk about how this is potentially his last game? And, you know, this is, you know, as we always see it in the lead-up to those farewells, this could be the last, you know, team announcement in front of the media. This Saturday could be the last game.
Yeah, there has been questions, but the answers have all been, we'll think about that after, if and when they happen to lose at the weekend. Rory Best was specifically asked about it as well, because of course it could be his last game on Saturday in an Ireland shirt, and he said, no, we'll just focus on that afterwards. That being said, Steve Hansen, in his press conference today, said that he bumped into Andy Farrell around Tokyo during the week, and Andy Farrell said to him, this could be one of our last games, or one of us has to go home after this sort of thing. So that's the sort of situation that deep down they'll know they're dealing with. Deep down, when it comes to the preparation, when it comes to the work that was put into training for this tournament, probably added a little bit more of an incentive for everybody, given that the players needed to it's their coaches' last outing and all that sort of stuff. This week, though, I'd say the focus has very much just been on the All Blacks and kind of getting through this specific hurdle, because it's an absolutely gigantic hurdle. Like, in terms of what the kind of sounds are like from the camp outside of that, then, there is, I think, a quiet sense of confidence. I don't think there's any sort of being overawed by the All Blacks, which you might have heard perhaps a decade ago in Ireland press conferences. That's kind of gone out the window. And I do think that does come from beating them two out of the last three times when they've played one another. I do think that reserve and confidence is a huge thing. Every single one of the starting 15 for Ireland on Saturday have beaten the All Blacks. And that is a huge thing. That is a huge feather to the cap of this entire team, and one that you'd like to think that they'll be able to call on.
And based on what Joe Schmidt has done with Ireland over the course of the last 6 years in charge, he's won, what, three Six Nations titles. He's got the first ever wins against the All Blacks. A first win against South Africa in South Africa. A first Test Series win in Australia. But you do obviously feel that his ultimate legacy is going to be based roughly around what happens this Saturday, this one game over the course of 6 years. I know some people might, you know, in the grand scheme of things, look at it and point out all the things he has won, but getting beyond that World Cup quarterfinal is ultimately the be-all and end-all for this Irish team, isn't it?
For sure. There's no question about it. It is the most important tournament in the sport. Therefore, it is actually fair enough to judge a coach on their record in that tournament. Now, 2015 colours this completely. So if we lose on Saturday and Ireland had got to a semi-final or potentially got to a final or whatever 4 years ago, then Joe Schmidt's legacy as a World Cup coach is probably a bit better. So we're not judging this independent of anything else. You know, it's not just like we're saying, well, if he loses to the All Blacks, he's a failure. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying that it's a knock-on impact of perhaps losing to Japan in the game that they feel that they should not have lost. It's a knock-on impact of losing to Argentina 4 years ago. This gives us the whole picture of what Joe Schmidt has achieved or failed to achieve in the World Cup. He's ticked off all the more minor boxes. I know winning a Grand Slam is not a minor thing whatsoever. Winning a summer tour in Australia, not a minor thing either, nor is going to Cape Town and winning as he did a couple of years ago. So they're big achievements, but the biggest is to finally get rid of this wretched record of always getting knocked out in the last stage of the Rugby World Cup. Because for a Grand Slam winning coach, for a coach who has won in Australia, who has won in Cape Town, that is not a good enough record to not get into the last four of the world, because they are hallmarks of a team who should be comfortable in World Cup quarterfinals every now and then, who should be able to get through to the semi-final and feel comfortable among the other three teams as the best four teams in the world. So this is where they've got to do it at the weekend to a certain point, but independent of anything else, when it's Ireland against the All Blacks, you can always expect favouritism for one way. I know it was a 12-point spread at the start of the week, Neil. I'm not sure is that moved in or out at this point, but that kind of shows the magnitude of the task that Ireland have to face. And I guess if you kind of call a handicap a 12-point head start, well, that actually manifests itself early in the game, where New Zealand gets something like a 12-point head start. You'd imagine it is curtains for this team, because this is something that we've been very good at. It is defending leads, but actually chasing leads is not something that a Joe Schmidt side has been amazing at in recent years.
Yeah, I see the players as well had they had family over the last few days. They were, you know, yesterday would have been their day off. Anyone who would have been looking around on Instagram would have seen a lot of them took in Disneyland where they've been staying. But it's obviously it's a bold enough move, I suppose, to give the players that chance to bring over the family and spend a kind of day with them. I'd say in previous tournaments they mightn't have done that, and on previous tours you're not going to be doing that. It's the kind of thing where if Ireland win at the weekend, this is going to be a genius move, you know, getting allowing the players to switch off for a day or so in the lead up to it. The players themselves, though, they seem to absolutely love the idea of it.
Yeah, completely. I'd like to know if this would have happened had they beaten Japan, Neil, had everything gone swimmingly over the last couple of weeks, because it does seem that this was kind of like a last-minute decision, because a lot of people were asked in the opening couple of days, like, do you have family coming over, et cetera, et cetera, and the answer was kind of like, nah, no plans to bring them over. So something changed, and you'd imagine that the only thing that hasn't really got the plan for Ireland so far is actually not beating Japan. So perhaps the camp wasn't as sunny when they were in real life, as opposed to how they were speaking to us in the press conference, because they always came across as pretty happy to us. But perhaps behind closed doors, things just didn't seem right, and perhaps getting that sense of normalcy was required, and getting family over was required, and perhaps they feel a little bit more at home. And you can probably make out in the camera now, the roads are wet behind me. It's been raining all day. It's just stopped here in Tokyo. There's a good chance it rains this weekend. We're starting to feel like normal conditions for early autumn in Dublin. They're starting to feel more at home, I suspect, and that gives them every chance of causing an upset at the weekend.
Another big thing for Irish fans this week, obviously, is getting tickets for the game. There would have been a lot, I imagine, that had bought tickets for the other quarterfinal involving South Africa and Japan now, thinking that we would have topped that pool. Have you been coming across many kind of trying to swap tickets over, and how successful have they been?
Yeah, I've got a heap of messages, to be honest, Neil. People just trying to find any help whatsoever. I've got in touch with a few Japanese journalists that we've met along the way, a couple of Japanese people who've been going to games. And really, their line is that if you're a Japanese person who's got a ticket for this Saturday's game, they don't want to trade that, because it is it is pockets of rugby union fans here in this country who perhaps bought a ticket, not necessarily in hope that Japan would be there, but more in the expectancy that the All Blacks would be in that fixture. So they've got a ticket and they're going along to watch the All Blacks. They're not going along to watch Ireland versus the All Blacks at the weekend. So that poses an extremely difficult situation for Irish fans. There are a number of events on Facebook, for example, but if you just scroll through the comments, it's all Irish people actually saying, I've got tickets for quarterfinal two, and I've got tickets for quarterfinal four, and I want to switch them for tickets for quarterfinal two. And that's all the messages. You don't have Japanese people in there actually saying, I'd like to switch either. So it's a very, very tricky situation. Had Scotland qualified and they topped the group and Ireland came second, we would be in a much easier position right now. It's just that it's the host nation. Just that these people have bought tickets specifically to watch this event rather than to watch their own home nation. It just makes it very, very tough. People are still trying on social media. Events are still trying to be set up, and hopefully there'll be a bit of a breakthrough over the next 24 hours when the Japanese people realize they had the opportunity themselves to watch their own country beat the Springboks. Again, most of them wouldn't have got over to where it was Brighton 4 years ago to actually see the miracle happen. This is an opportunity for you to see the Miracle episode two, folks. Why don't you take my ticket and go and watch that on Sunday night, sort of thing. So fingers crossed for the Irish fans. It does something good happens luck-wise for them over the next day or so.
Yeah, I think you've almost half answered the next question, but a text in here on our YouTube channel from Dylan, who says, how has Owen seen the atmosphere grow in Japan as the tournament has gone on?
Ah, it's been incredible. It's been absolutely incredible. I didn't actually think that this thing would take over to the point that it actually has at the start. Now, granted, there's always a bit of kind of feeling your way into the tournaments, but I've just realised how kind of enhanced that whole idea is at a Rugby World Cup. I think at a Football World Cup, it's like bang, bang, bang every single day, big games every week. And then all of a sudden, after a fortnight, you're into the last 16, huge knockout games. Whereas with the Rugby World Cup, there's a bit of a slow build. Of course, there was an instant hit that first weekend when you had Japan on in Yokohama and then South Africa against New Zealand on in Yokohama. And then it goes on a bit of a dip. Just coming back to Tokyo now, it does feel, just kind of feels that there's actually more evidence of the Rugby World Cup branding even around Tokyo at the moment. I don't think they've put up anymore. It just feels that there's just a bit more of an energy around the place. And it feels like the home nation and their support have really come into their own. Like, I would say that the expectancy, the hope, the kind of excitement around the Japan team when it comes to Japanese people themselves has gone to a whole new level over the last couple of weeks. We were kind of the victims in all of that. If it wasn't for that Ireland game, really, this team wouldn't be at the level it is, I suspect.
Yeah, I think so as well. Another text here, expecting a big performance from Peter Romani this Saturday. He always delivers when questions are asked. I think it's a fair comment to make. Owen as well, I meant to ask, have you got your accreditation sorted for that South Africa and Japan game? I know you were looking to.
Yeah, I do indeed, thankfully. World Rugby sorted me out big time there in terms of getting a ticket for South Africa and Japan, because as you can imagine, the demand for it is absolutely incredible. I think perhaps the fact that you've got the other quarterfinals down in an entirely different part of the country probably helps a little bit. So a lot of the UK media and obviously the French media are down in Oita at the moment, so they can't get in within an ass's roar of this place. So it's all to us, it's all to the Japanese media, to the Irish. But then again, you've got New Zealand and Springbok media as well, which is a fair old big cohort. So I got lucky for that. I can't wait for that fixture. It will be just sensational. If you're going to Yokohama, rocking up, feeling relaxed after the previous night's work, that Ireland have beaten the All Blacks, all of a sudden then Sunday just becomes this great, exciting moment, because you know that we're here for another 2 weeks and you can properly, for once, embrace how happy the Japanese people potentially can be, because the last time the Irish supporters and the Irish journalists got to actually view this moment, we were kind of distracted because we were like, what the hell just happened to Ireland there, getting beaten by a tier two nation? So I think if Ireland beat the All Blacks, there might actually be a few Irish people who might hold on to their tickets for Sunday in the hope that they might be able to buy a second one for Saturday, and then they go and watch another quarterfinal. So it's going to be a fantastic weekend of rugby. From a television perspective, if you're at home, there are four cracking games. But thankfully, just to be here and down in Yokohama over the next couple of days, it's going to be absolutely brilliant.
In terms of weather conditions, obviously that is something that has dominated the conversation over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's either been too hot and humid, or, you know, we're talking typhoon levels of bad weather. What are we looking like for this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be like this. Good chance of rain. It feels kind of cold at the moment. The night times at night has got kind of cold every single night at this point. We kind of felt it at the end of Fukuoka as well. It just goes off like a light switch, really, the humidity. So autumn has set in really here in Japan, and that'll be a huge factor for Ireland in Tokyo Stadium this weekend. I think I said Yokohama there a few times. Probably helps to know which stadium I'm actually going to this weekend. It's Tokyo Stadium rather than Yokohama, of course, for both games this weekend. So it's like this. It's a bit drizzly at the moment, and the more rain we do, I think Justin Marshall said to me yesterday, I did a little rain dance when he told me the forecast for the weekend. I think most Irish people would be the same, because I think Chicago was an anomaly in more ways than one. It wasn't just us beating the All Blacks for once. It was also the manner in which we did it. Like, we're probably not going to win 40-29 this weekend, but we might beat them 15-9 or something like that. So we need an absolute dog of a day, Neil, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think so as well. Listen, Owen, thanks a million for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon. Enjoy the weekend.
Cheers, Neil. Chat to you.
Owen Sheehan, our man in Japan there, speaking to us ahead of Ireland and New Zealand this weekend. Now, Owen, earlier on in the week, he spoke to former All Blacks scrum half Justin Marshall. You can watch all that interview back on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/offtheball, or check out the best bits as well on offtheball.com/radio. Now, we can hear a little bit from it. Here's Justin Marshall speaking about Ireland scrum half Conor Murray and his form of 2019 so far.
One of the last things I just wanted to ask you about, Justin, was about Conor Murray's performances so far this calendar year. Obviously, ends 2018 is arguably the best scrum half in the world. Mm. This year hasn't gone amazingly for him, but I do wonder if he was so central to Ireland's tactical plan in terms of box kicking that as soon as you figure out Ireland tactically, suddenly Conor Murray's performance dips. I'm not sure what you've made of his graph this year.
Well, he's a high-quality player, and he is world-class. And on his day, he's capable of causing lots of teams big headaches because he's intelligent. I think what has happened with Ireland is, yes, they've become predictable and they haven't evolved their kicking game. And because of that, I think Conor Murray got given the mantle of being the best scrum half in the world. But a lot of the plaudits that were coming his way were about the way that he controlled the kicking game.
Sure.
So then teams analyse it and go, okay, what are his idiosyncrasies? When he gets set to kick, where does he normally kick? What areas does he want to put it in? And so the back three adjust, wingers adjust, they get used to it, and they know and expect what's coming. What I do think is what he's done then is not being able to have the rest of his game in sync. He's got a great running game, but you don't see it now because he's used so regularly as a kicker. So what I'm basically trying to say is proportionately the balance in his game plan is out. So the way that he plays is he's become ultimately more of a kicking scrum half than having all of it together as a balance, you know, defence, a running game, passing game to the breakdown quickly and the kicking. He's gone 60-70% to a kicking scrum half, and I don't think that's been good for his game. Like, I know myself, when I wanted to get myself into the game, I wanted to take a couple of steps, bring a defender in, put someone in a hole, or if they drift off me, take a break and really ask some questions, which takes pressure off everybody outside you as well. And I just don't think his balance is right in his game. He's still a quality player and he's still got it in him. You just wonder what messages he's been giving and how he should play out there.
Yeah, that's Justin Marshall. Some very interesting thoughts on the way Conor Murray is playing and maybe the way he should be playing. And maybe I think it just shows the difference in attitudes towards the game from New Zealand and Ireland, that, you know, someone like Justin Marshall is saying he's kind of kicking the ball too much. And as good a kicker as he is, he's so lethal when he's making breaks around the base of the ruck. And for a scrum half, the physicality he has and the size he has, he's such an asset for Ireland and Munster in that regard. Maybe we just don't, he doesn't get the license to do that as much. It would be very interesting to see how he approaches this weekend's game, because obviously he missed He missed the fixture a year ago, but he does have the experience of beating New Zealand in Soldier Field in 2016 and a win with the Lions as well and a draw on that tour in 2017. Another person who's going to be in the middle, literally speaking, this weekend, Nigel Owens. He's going to be refereeing. Alan Quinlan was on OTBM this morning speaking about the challenges that the Welsh official is going to be facing in Tokyo Stadium.
I think I have to be careful what way I say this because it's it can be taken in the wrong way. But they're a cynical side, and I like that because it's a way of intimidating the opposition. It's a way of pressurizing the opposition. It's a way of pushing the laws, the boundaries, the offsides, all that kind of stuff. They're in your face. They're a very confrontational side, and there's no way Nigel Owens can pick up everything. I think it was one of the key things in that victory last year. Ireland gave away 5 penalties. They gave away 11. They were a bit disgruntled after the game. They were very lucky not to have Sam Whitelock yellow carded early on in that game. And Wayne Barnes did a really good job. So it's a hard game to referee this because it is going to be quite aggressive and quite physical. But, you know, he is a good communicator. And I think Joe Schmidt will obviously highlight some things before the game to him, and Steve Hansen will probably be doing stuff about the Irish as well.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on Nigel Owens this weekend to see how he gets on in Ireland and New Zealand. Wayne Barnes was the man in the middle last time around in 2018, and I think Ireland got the rub of the green that night. New Zealand got caught trying to slow things down. The penalty count was quite high against them. So Ireland, I think they're going to need some of that luck as well this weekend. Just to recap before we finish up, here are the games that are happening this weekend, the 4 quarterfinals. This Saturday, 8:15 a.m. Irish time is the first one in Ōita. That is Australia against England. And as I pointed out a few minutes ago at the start of this show, Michael Checa and Eddie Jones making a couple of huge selection calls on their sides. Michael Checa putting Jordan Pitaia in for just his 3rd appearance, playing for the first time at centre for Australia as well. The 19-year-old only made his debut earlier on in this tournament, but he is incredibly highly rated, making the Australia World Cup squad despite only playing 13 games of Super Rugby in the last 2 years. Missed most of this season due to a couple of injuries as well. So that is going to be fascinating to see how he gets on, because of course he's up against Manu Tuilagi in the opposite shirt, and you would be expecting that Tuilagi is going to be running the ball down his throat all day long. England, for their side, they have also made a massive change. They have dropped George Forge to the bench. Owen Farrell takes on the 10 jersey, and it means that Henry Slade comes into the centre to partner Manu Tuilagi, a partnership which worked very, very well for England at times during the Six Nations, particularly when they played Ireland as well. Also this weekend then, 11:15 Irish time, you have Ireland against New Zealand at Tokyo Stadium. That is the big one for us. 11:15 a.m. Irish time. Before on Sunday, Wales against France. That is the 8:15 kickoff Sunday morning Irish time. That one is in Ōita as well. Before the Springboks against Japan, 11:15. A repeat of that game in 2015 when Japan stunned South Africa. Could they possibly do it again? I remember before the Six Nations when before the World Cup, they played in a friendly, and Razzie Erasmus was asked about the potential of another upset, and he said that, you know, they made a movie about the first time they beat us. Our job this time around is to make sure there isn't a sequel. Well, they made sure there wasn't a sequel in their warm-up game before the World Cup, but this is the real business. So that is the last of the World Cup quarterfinals. And the semi-final lineup, the winners of Australia against England this weekend, they'll go up against Ireland and New Zealand next weekend, while it'll be either Wales against France against the Springboks or Japan for a place in the final on the other side of the draw. That's where we're going to leave it for this afternoon on the Rugby World Cup show. We'll be back for more this Saturday with a little bit of a preview before Ireland and New Zealand kick off at 11:15 Irish time. So around 10:30 we expect to be on the air on OTB Sports Radio and streaming across all of our social channels as well. We'll speak to you soon.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.